Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 33, and we're going to be recording it today, which is June 18th, 2014. And my name is Sujit Mello. I'm a consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space. On Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Kale.
Hey, Sujit. This is Kale Teeter. I'm also a consultant in the MCS space and the app dev space in the New York region, and work mostly with .NET development in Azure.
Great. Thanks for having you, Kale, here. Evan's off today. I believe he's on the beach. He gets a lot of vacation time. He seems to be on the beach a lot. I don't know how he manages it. You know, I got to try and get his job maybe for a change. But I forgot to mention the topic that we're going to be talking today. Something very, very near and dear to Kale, actually. Something he's been working on a lot these days, and we thought we'd pick his brain on that, which is cloud authentication. But before we get to that, let's cover some new updates and also give folks some pointers, which we'll put on the website, of course, some great links, blogs, et cetera, that have been written by various Microsoft folks that we noticed on the web. Okay, let's get started with Kale. You put a couple over here with the Azure Web Jobs.
Yeah, I actually have two here. The first one's on the there's a new beta preview. I think it's 0.3.0 if you're tracking version numbers on the Azure Web Jobs SDK, which is something we talked about a few weeks back when we were talking about automation. And this thing's really growing fast. If you take the time to read this article, it's quite long. But it shows, it even has some videos in there, I think. But it walks you through a lot of the new changes and the new features that they're adding. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the GUI side now where it's showing you a lot more on the output side as you're working with these things. And a lot of like the reporting side of it to see like how these things, your jobs actually ran up there. But there's also like been enhancements to the SDK itself. I think Scott Hanselman's actually in here talking about this somewhat. Ooh. But you can pick this up. It's in NuGet, so if anybody's using the NuGet stuff, you can go get it there. But again, it's focused around those types of jobs we talked about before, the typical things that need to run in the background that you just want to shove to the background. It doesn't affect the UI so much. And now there's support for things like Service Bus. So I know, Sujit, you had mentioned before when we talked about this topic about how the SDK has, you know, these special attributes in there to basically the way you can program, you can write things much more clear than having to write a bunch of lines of code. And now the Service Bus has been added to that.
Oh, I see. So the special attributes for the Service Bus, the input-output queue and whatnot.
Yeah, and the queue stuff even changed, and it's a little more simple if you look at it from what it was originally designed as. The other thing was it's the branding stuff, so it changed from, you know, we had namespaces like Microsoft.Windows Azure, now it's just Microsoft.Azure.
Yeah, sure.
So just cleaning up the namespaces. There's a bunch of different things. The cancellation token thing's kind of cool, so if anybody uses those with the async stuff in some of our other libraries, you'd be familiar with what that can do to be able to, you know, cancel jobs and things like that in a controlled manner.
Excellent, yeah. And then I see you've got something on machine learning, which seems to be the hot topic these days.
Yeah, this one's a little bit harder to get into. It's out there in public preview, but it's a limited public preview, I think is what they call it, where you basically can put your name on a list and, you know, to sign up for access, you go into a queue and that kind of thing. But it's this machine learning in the cloud. So being able to, I think they're calling it like cloud ML. I keep seeing that term used a lot, but not a ton of details on this yet because not much has been released on it, but stay tuned on that. I think that's going to be a big thing, especially with the Internet of Things and how that stuff all integrates together.
Excellent. Well, I added a couple of links myself. First off is, well, we, you know, we have a lot of customers that are in the life sciences space, you know, hospitals and the like, medical companies, and they have special requirements, you know, when it comes to making sure they fit within the FDA guidelines and other such guidelines. So there's a nice blog post by one of our folks, and you know, what are the qualification guidelines that Microsoft provides so that in order for you to host your application in Azure if you're in the life sciences area. So we'll put a link to that on the website. And then another one is this, I think we spoke about it a while ago, the VNet to VNet configuration that can, there's a bunch of configuration steps that need to be done to get that to work correctly. And there's a nice blog post from Azure Networking Senior PM Yu-Shun Wang, and we'll put a link to that as well on the show notes. And these days, security seems to be the hot topic. You know, Gail, you and I were just talking about that just before, how some companies are can be pretty paranoid about security these days, and especially when you go to the cloud, they get even more paranoid. So there is, you know, there's some nice best practices that some of our security PMs at Microsoft have put together, and there's so we'll put a few links. So there's a session that it's like a video you can watch on all the best practices for designing cloud platforms that are secure. You know, clearly breaks down all the responsibilities between the Azure platform, between the application, you know, and the consumer by default. So that's something that we'll put in there. And there's another presentation on some of the internal penetration testing that is done by Microsoft within Azure. So there's folks, you know, that are wondering how we validate our own infrastructure. They can come in and see things like, you know, how does Azure Security really operate? It's not some black box. It's all listed out there for you. You know, what are the threats that it's trying to ward off against? And then there's this concept of, I guess, red team and blue team roles. So keeps it fairly a real world in terms of the kind of things that Azure is doing. And then
I didn't want to interrupt. But yeah. I thought that was hilarious. The red versus blue. You know what that is, right? The red versus blue is Halo.
That's the red team and blue team. Okay.
Now, they years ago when Halo 2 first came out, they had, you know, that was the colors in Halo when you played multiplayer. You were the red team or the blue team. So this company in Texas, these guys started to do this thing called Machinima, where they would animate, use Halo, and like record themselves doing things to make the character move and then add their own voice to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this whole Machinima thing came from. And that was called Red versus Blue, and it's huge. Like, it became this massive thing, you
wow.
know. And so it's funny, when I saw Red versus Blue in there, I thought of that.
Gives makes security a bit fun for a change. And and then, you know, talks about how you can detect modeled real world attacks, how you can detect and respond to any possible issues, security issues within Azure. And then just to wrap up, you know, we just talked about the automation system and, you know, web jobs and whatnot. And there's some nice blog posts that have been written on telling you how to troubleshoot those automation jobs, you know, because they can be a little tricky sometimes. So there's, you know, when you have your runbooks, this is the workflow jobs that we talked about in one of our previous, I think it's episode number 30, the workflow-oriented automation. How do you go about trying to figure out why things are not working? And we'll put a few links to that as well in the show notes. All right, so that's enough for all the new stuff and some of the links. Let's get to the meat of our discussion today. Cale, I believe you've been pretty busy this week with meeting some customers talking about cloud authentication. Can you give us a quick high level on what are the various forms of authentication that are available in Azure to applications?
Yeah, and again, this is something that's like a trend. You know, there's a lot of people doing this now. You mentioned people being paranoid about the cloud. Maybe not being paranoid, but being a little more paranoid because you're giving up a little bit of control there when it's not running in your house data center. And, you know, just to speak through, it just got me thinking, you know, there's a lot of different ways to handle authentication in the cloud, especially when you're trying to operate in a hybrid type mode, which is what most people do. Not a lot of people are just taking everything and putting it into a cloud vendor. They want to make it interoperate with their on-premise system.
Sure.
So there's a lot of different ways, and I thought maybe we'd just take an episode here and just talk about a couple of the different technologies we have and what the gaps they fill.
Great. So I'm just going to, I know you've listed a few. I'll just run through them, and then maybe we can talk about them. You have Windows Azure Active Directory listed as your first item.
And really what I just wanted to be clear about, and not to get into the weeds, but just a little high level, what is the primary difference between Windows Azure? And I say Windows Azure Active Directory. I don't know if we have a new name for that yet. I'll call it Azure Active Directory so that we don't use that word. But what's the difference between a managed, Azure Active Directory as opposed to the Windows Server Active Directory that we've known and loved for many years, in the on-premise world? So what's the difference between these two? And there's a lot of differences. But where this started to come about was, when Office 365 first kind of came out.
Mm-hmm.
So when we saw that first come to light, we needed a way to authenticate those users up there because people just don't take DCs and put them in the cloud right away. So by default, if anybody has used Office 365, whether it's a personal one or a small business or even a big enterprise, when you first set up the account, the thing that's backing that, and even not beyond when you first set the account up, while that account is set up, those identities that are in there are living in Azure Active Directory. Which is not an LDAP service that we're used to, like the on-premise Windows Server Active Directory. It's a managed service that's providing similar functionality, bit more limited than what the on-premise. You can't do things like computer objects and things like that. It's more centered around users and groups.
But Cale, just to be clear, it is the same secure infrastructure that we all know and love, correct?
I mean, if you look at it through the interface that you're given up there in Azure, it looks very similar to what you would see, in our tools for our on-premise stuff. But there is no way. The big thing that I keep bringing up about LDAP is a lot of people think, oh, we can just, leverage Azure Active Directory, but I have applications that maybe speak LDAP.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just, make them talk there? And you can't, by default.
There is no LDAP endpoint available to you, essentially.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
We have things like Graph API and a bunch of different ways if you're using WIF, and then we can talk about the federation here a little later, but there's other ways to leverage it to hook your apps up to it.
Okay. Great. So that's Windows Azure, or Azure Active Directory, as we'll call it now. Next up is ADFS, which is the federation stuff that you just talked about, right?
Yeah, and so there's two things here that kind of go hand in hand when you talk about a hybrid solution. There's federate, you can either federate or you can synchronize or you can do both.
Mm-hmm.
So if we break those down a little bit, the simplest model to start with to begin with is synchronization. So we've done that for years with different tools. So has Oracle, so has a bunch of different people. NetWare had their own solution with eDirectory. But basically, we had our MIS and FIM products, the ILM products, that would do that synchronization for you of whether it was just attributes or passwords or both. And that's really what those tools were designed for. So if you look at this tool we have, it's called Directory Sync, DirSync.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you'll see that, especially when you start talking about Office 365, because that's the tool that's in place to help you synchronize your on-premise world up to Azure Active Directory and Office 365. So if you're looking at, when you first migrate over there, you could, do some sort of manual manipulation to put your users up there in your Office 365 environment. Again, it's usually not a big bang thing where we just switch over and everybody's over in the new system. And there's usually a period of migration where you're operating in a hybrid mode where you have some people still on-premises and some people up in the cloud. And so as you're doing that migration, DirSync's really helpful for that because you can tailor who you want to be synced up there and what exactly you want to sync up there. So something that's pretty new to that tool is password synchronization.
Password sync. I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
does that make that's supposed to be a little faster, right? It doesn't really synchronize everything. Is that what it is?
Well, no. So what we had originally when we released the DirSync tool, we had to copy the users and groups and attributes inside of those up there to the cloud Active mm-hmm. Directory. And that worked well for that. The problem was it didn't synchronize passwords, which in most cases wouldn't matter if you're doing federated. We'll talk about that in a second. But if you did want to try to synchronize it, it didn't support that. Now, in the past, with our other identity products, we had a thing called password synchronization. I mentioned MIS, and then it was ILM, and then it became FIM. Those all had a thing called PCNS. It was a password change notification infrastructure that would basically run on your domain controllers and had a password filter in there. So every time someone changed their password, it would tell the identity management system that they changed their password, and then if you had filters in there to say synchronize that password to these other places, it would handle it for you. But this one works a little bit differently. This one's operating totally off of the hashes in Active Directory. So Active Directory doesn't store, you know, your plain text password, obviously, because mm-hmm. then it would be an attack vector. It hashes it, and the hash is stored. And because both sides of this equation are controlled by Microsoft and our Active Directory, they can do a lot. They can take a lot of liberties there, and that's what that tool does to be able to synchronize that stuff over. The other stuff I mentioned before could interoperate with, you know, other vendors like Google or Oracle or something like that. You could make it interoperate with those. This one's very tailored to exactly this thing of saying, I have an on-premise Active Directory, and I want to sync it to the cloud Active Directory.
Okay, I got it now. And it doesn't actually – the password itself is not being sent. It's just the hash that's being sent up, correct?
Right, and to be clear, it's not just the hash. It takes the hash, and it does some magic with it that's apparently a trade secret because I don't even know what it does.
I believe it rehashes the hash or something of that nature. And it's,
Yeah, there's another thing that happens to that to further protect it before it gets sent there, yes.
Okay. Great. I know that just on this point, though, I read somewhere that there was, I don't know if they've fixed it recently, but there was an issue. If you have a policy, a password policy on premises, that password policy does not automatically flow to the AD infrastructure, the Azure infrastructure.
That's
correct. You have to set it again there, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So that's the thing you want to watch out for, especially when you're trying to enforce strong complex rules like that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that's the one side of the equation, right? The directory sync. And to be clear, if you're using Office 365, you're of any large size, you're probably going to be running DirSync because you want that as you provision new users to your infrastructure to automatically be provisioned up there. They won't necessarily get a mailbox by default, but you could set it so that it could provision that automatically.
I just want to understand. So the main advantage of DirSync, it sounds like to me, is that your authentication is actually happening directly in Azure, right? When users authenticate, they never come back to on-premises for that. This thing just keeps the two in sync in the background.
I mean, it can, right? That's one way you can use it. If you didn't use the password sync, which is mm-hmm. relatively new, so there may be people not using it. It was more about just getting that that record up there created, mm-hmm. so that the Office 365, for instance. I mean, it could be other things, but Office 365 could then use that to authenticate. Yeah, you could authenticate them off of there, or even if you're doing federation, you still need that record up there,
right?
For it to use. Yeah.
Okay.
Basically to tie their mailbox and all those things that are happening up there. Yep.
All the other attributes that go along with besides the password.
Yep. So the other side of the fence is federation, which is much more complex. So in a federated model, we're able to decouple the provider, whoever this is. In our case, it's Active Directory. We're able to decouple that from how people are going to access that. So we can do things like have Office 365, when it goes to authenticate, somebody hits their Office 365 page, it's going to say, I need to authenticate this user. It looks in Azure Active Directory and says, what kind of user is this? Is this a cloud user or a federated user? If it's a federated user, it has a configuration inside the configuration in Office 365 that says where's his Federation server. You get directed to typically a web page, and then you have to sign in with your credentials there, which could authenticate off of your backend Active Directory. And then, yeah, the process continues from that point. But basically what we can do then is move that to wherever we need it. If we wanted to host that, there's a whole series of servers behind that. There's proxy servers. You want to put it in a DMZ so that people can hit it from the internet. You can make it private only, in which case you may not need the proxy servers. But anyhow, it basically allows you to maybe host your Active Directory and keep that stuff all on-premise, but still use cloud things like Office 365.
Okay.
Now, one thing that's kind of like a little gotcha here is the DirSync. So if we turn on DirSync now, and we also turn on Password Sync, if you're a federated user, so inside Windows Azure Active Directory, if we see that you're a federated user, we won't sync the password. Because it makes no sense for us to put it up there, because you're going to come back anyhow to ADFS. But the neat thing that opened up, which was kind of a thing that I'd run into, you know, months back with other customers, was where do you put your ADFS infrastructure, right? So you could put everything for ADFS in an Azure IS instance, and you could even run it through a VPN tunnel back to your Active Directory on-premise. You could host it all on-premise, but it premises, but it becomes like, you know, we need it in both places, actually, right? Because we don't want it, you know, to be in one place. What if it fails on premises?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah, I thought from that perspective, I thought DirSync was a little more robust, right? Because you're actually authenticating with the copy in Azure, and the DirSync is synchronizing in the background. Whereas here, it's at the time point of authentication, it's coming back into your on-premises or wherever your real Azure is. I mean, your real AD is.
Yeah, and you're spot on with that. And that's what that Password Sync enabled. So now we have a feature that, again, this is really new, but when we turned on the password synchronization option in DirSync, I mentioned that if you're federated, it's not syncing your password.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a special, and you can do it through PowerShell. You can actually, so let's say you were running your ADFS infrastructure on-premises with your Active Directory on-premises. You do DirSync to get your, you know, core records up there in Azure Active Directory that O365 is using. But O365 says, you know, in my case, Kale is a federated user, so it always comes back to ADFS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could turn on Password Sync, and it won't sync my password up there. But in the case that, let's say, the ADFS infrastructure blows up, let's say something happens on premises, the ADFS infrastructure's got a problem, it's not working. Normally in that model, you have a problem, right? Because people still have internet access, they can still get to the Office 365 instance, and when they go to authenticate, they can't.
Right.
Because it's coming back to the on premises, and it's like, no, something's wrong, we can't do it. So now, guess what? They can't access their mail.
Right.
Big problem, because mail is typically a pretty critical function for businesses now. Yeah. You know, there was other ways that we did this, you know, being able to use some of the advanced, the ARR stuff in IIS, set up stuff in the cloud to be able to do this failover, but it was very complicated to try to pull that off. Now, with that DirSync, if we have Password Sync enabled and that model happens, we can go to a PowerShell command and say temporarily change that stuff over and have people just authenticate off the cloud for now.
Mm.
And it will then take whatever's in Active Directory that's in scope to be synced, sync their passwords up to the cloud. So there is a little lag period there. I think they said somewhere around 2 hours. It may take for a full flush up there. And obviously it'll depend on how many users you have and that kind of thing.
Right.
But once that replication happens and it pushes that stuff up, people can start authenticating right away and use that. Now, there's two ways to do that, right? You can do this temporary failover where it basically just says, go ahead and start letting people authenticate as cloud users, and it'll sync the passwords. They can keep doing their thing. You can have your engineers fix the ADFS infrastructure, get things back the way they're supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
and then once you test it and say, yeah, it's good to go, then we can just fail back. So that's one way. And then the other way is a permanent mode. So if you said, you know, we're done with ADFS, we actually want to just put everything up in Azure Active Directory and have it authenticate cloud-wise,
right.
You can do that as well.
Okay.
But that's a really cool feature because it does allow you to have that two-world thing of, let me have most of my stuff on premises because I still want control of that stuff for now, and I trust that stuff more, and I want that. But if it fails, I need to have a backup, you know.
Now, so interesting. Let's suppose a customer decided to do this permanently, like you said. Okay, they've decided to move all their AD infrastructure to the cloud. And now, what happens about their internal apps or internal, machines that need to authenticate? How does that happen?
In what? Maybe explain a little more. I'm not sure.
They've decided they don't need an on-premises AD, correct?
Right.
They're only going to use the one in the cloud.
Okay.
Is that the model we're talking about here? Or is it always going to be synchronized?
I mean, typically, if they're a big shop, like if they're a big enterprise, they're using Federation services because of the advantages they're getting there, at least now. So I would think that even if they were doing that, they would still have a claims-based auth thing running there. It may be ADFS, and that's what their internal apps would be coded to bounce off of, right? Okay. Not directly against Active Directory. Yeah, it's a good point, Sajid. I mean, if people are doing like binds and things like that from their app, or they build a custom authentication module that underneath is actually using LDAP or something, that needs to be addressed, right, if you're thinking about moving to the cloud.
Right. And I suppose if you use things like WIF and whatnot, that would be kind of abstracted a little bit with some of the APIs that...
Yeah, and we have some stuff out there too, like the Graph API that you could code against. If you wanted to do a custom auth module, but you still want to use the cloud,
mm-hmm.
you could do that as well.
Great. That's a really good explanation. Thank you. And then, let's see, multi-factor authentication seems to be the new buzzword around town. What's this all about?
I mean, we've had that for some time now, and it just basically means you have to prove two different things, two different claims whenever you're going to authenticate, right? So if you're talking about typically people have a password, right, to log into a system, which would be a one factor. A second factor would be something else. Maybe it's an SMS message. So when you go to log in, you put your password in, then it says, I just sent a message to your phone with a code. Go get that thing and mm-hmm. then put it in here so I know for sure it's you because I know you're the only one that holds that phone.
Right.
And we've got a bunch of different ways to do that. I mentioned SMS, but there's phone. And a lot of the providers do this, not just Microsoft. There's a lot of people that do multi-factor. We have one on our phone, too, that functions typically like the RSA keys, the tokens that people have used for years,
right.
Where it basically has a random number, and you have to put that number in, and it gets changed every 30 seconds or something like that. So it's just another way to prove that you're you.
Okay.
When you're coming up there. But yeah, and that stuff stretches across a lot of our products now. I know that the stuff that I first used here that we were doing multi-factor was even Outlook.com, the Hotmail.
That's right.
And they come out with that, and we had the Authenticator app on a Windows phone, which was cool. And I think that runs, I'm not sure, do you know, does that run on the other platforms, our Authenticator app?
I would imagine, yeah, because
I think so.
It's not specific to the phone itself. It can be used for accessing apps from any platform.
But we have it now for both sides, right? The Office 365 right. side as well as the Outlook. Yeah.
So how do you? What's anything special to enable this in O365 or with Azure?
Yeah, there's actually more features in Azure. If you, we should probably put a link in the link dump, Sajid. I can get you one.
Okay.
But there's a lot more features for this. Advanced type of authentication up in Azure. And when I mean up in Azure, I mean, so if you have administrators or people like that that are going to be authenticating to your Azure portal to do management, you know, maybe they're developers, maybe they're DevOps, and you're using your, let's say, your Active Directory, your Azure Active Directory user accounts that's integrated,
mm-hmm.
Then you can do multi-factor authentication there. You can also do it on your O365 side, and there's a configuration screen inside the settings in O365 to walk you through that process.
Yeah. Excellent. Great. All right. That's nice. That's a very nice roundup of all the authentication things that are available in Azure and cloud authentication in general. Now, we talked about Office 365 a lot, but I'm assuming that cloud apps and also leverage some of this, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
This is not just limited to O365, so same applies to cloud applications, websites, especially running in the cloud, that need to authenticate with on-premises.
Yeah, and the nice thing is when you use a lot of these things that are integrated into our products, like the multi-factor authentication, even if once you set that up and build that infrastructure, if you're using some of our tools like ADFS proxies, a lot of that stuff comes along, right? So you just set that up once, and then, you know, if you have a bunch of line of business applications, guess what? Now they can be multi-factor. So that's great.
Great. Thank you. Just one more thing I forgot to mention in the initial discussion. I didn't know about this, but it was brought to my attention recently that Azure, in some cases in the U.S., has been using non-U.S. IPv4 addresses, okay, although they're being assigned in U.S. regions. And there was some confusion about that, so our Azure networking senior PM, Ganesh Srinivasan, he has a nice blog post describing why. Essentially, what it all comes down to is, you know, the IPv4 address range is, it's been running out of capacity for many years, I think. It gets tighter and tighter in terms of the number of IP addresses that are available. And they actually ran out of inventory on the U.S. IPv4 addresses, so they actually had to use non-US IPv4 addresses in the US just to meet the demand in Azure. So I thought that was pretty interesting. We'll put a blog post of that so our customers, our listeners are aware of that in case they notice it.
Yeah, you know what that can cause, like the downstream effects of that? Have you thought about that? Like,
tell me.
I mean, the first thing that pops into my head is App Insights, right? So if you have any kind of tool running like that, any kind of analytics tool where it's saying, here's where my users are coming from.
Oh, it'll think you're coming from Bahrain or something like that.
Yeah. So it's like,
that's funny.
Whoops, why do we have all these people here? I was like, no, they're actually in the U.S. or the U.K. or something.
But just to be clear, this is not the client. So this is just the server VMs that are allocated in there. So you're right. It's relative to all the infrastructure running in Azure.
Yeah.
There could be confusion definitely on that end. Well, we'll put all those links and more in the show notes. And again, thank you very much, all our listeners, for listening in. And if you guys have any questions about or want us to cover any specific topics, please let us know via our Twitter handle, Azure Podcast. And if you have any real world topics that you're encountering today at your company, something that you're thinking about doing for Azure and you're not sure about it, please let us know, and I will be in touch with you, and we'll get some more details for you and cover it on a future show. All right. Well, Cale, thanks again for all your time, and enjoy the rest of your week. We'll see you next week with Evan, hopefully.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.